Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 31st, 2020. We'll start today's readings on the front page with Central Illinois People. We want to give back. Decatur students bring Valentine's cheer to Mowiqua. Outside, it was a gray January day, but inside, pink and red hearts, glitter stickers, and chattering young people made the day a little brighter. Durfee Magnet School fifth graders and Eisenhower High School basketball players visited the Mowiqua Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center on Thursday to make Valentine's Day decorations for residents' doors and share snacks and stories. It was a good opportunity for us to give back to people who really don't have nobody, said Cam Rowe, a senior at Eisenhower. Us as a team, we're family, and everything we do is all about us, but we want to give back. Some teams don't really do stuff like this, but it's a heartbreaking moment. The residents don't all have somebody to put a smile on their face. That's something I really like to do. Activity director Stephanie Moreland and Durfee teacher Heather Heron went to high school together, and Moreland called Heron a year ago to ask her to bring students to sing Christmas carols for residents. The basketball team enjoyed it so much, Heron said, that they asked to do it again, which is why the high school students and the Durfee students visited on Thursday. We came to spread some Valentine cheer, Heron said, and some of them wanted to see the residents again, so we made it happen. Durfee teacher Karen Walker said the crafts were festive decorations for the residents' rooms, and she and Heron chose materials that would be easy for all ages to manipulate. If residents didn't want to help make the decorations or lacked the dexterity, the kids did the work for them and made enough extra for the residents who didn't choose to attend the event. Now, we were here last year, and doing stuff like this is a real positive thing for everyone, including ourselves, said Malachi Carson, also an Eisenhower senior. It makes us feel better, and it makes them feel better, and it just gives good vibes, and that's what we like to do. We're here for our community, said the fifth grader, Katie Cooper. Some of them don't really get visitors. Terry Cook, who coaches the basketball team, said the visit was an opportunity not only for the players to serve the community, but to create a bond with each other. He hopes to make it an annual event. They get to see that life is more than just basketball, and it's not all about them, he said. It's a humbling experience for them, the basketball players, and shows that they care and they can give back in a different way. And the picture on page 2 accompanying this shows Eisenhower senior Malachi Carson working on some Valentine's Day themed crafts on Thursday for residents at Mowiqua Rehabilitation Center. And he has several hearts on a string, and one is L, O, V, one is L, the next is O, the next is V, and the last is E. And the front page picture shows Durfee Magnet School fifth grader Michaela Rice and resident Brenda Rhodes. They're talking at Mowiqua Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center on Thursday. Students met with residents and had Valentine's Day activities. And Brenda Rhodes is in a wheelchair, and she's holding a very brightly colored Happy Valentine's Day paper with lots of hearts and lots of different colors. And the girls are pushing her and talking with her in her wheelchair. Public Health, Macon County monitoring virus in Chicago. First person-to-person spread of coronavirus reported in U.S. Springfield, the first U.S. case of the coronavirus spreading from one person to another was reported in Chicago on Thursday. The husband of a woman who caught the disease while in China. The case is the first confirmed person-to-person transmission of the virus in the U.S. and the sixth confirmed case in the country. Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Nongsi Ezike hosted, I think it's Ngozi Ezeke hosted a news conference with county and city health officials in Chicago and said the risk to the general public remains low. The second case is a Chicago man and is the husband of the first confirmed case in Illinois, she said. The woman, in her 60s, returned from Wuhan, China, the city at the center of the outbreak, in mid-January. Her husband did not travel to China. All those who had close contact with the woman were being monitored, and her husband began displaying symptoms in recent days. When he did, he was admitted to the hospital and placed in isolation. Ezeke said there are 21 individuals in Illinois who are considered persons under investigation for the virus, which is considered novel because not much is known about the new strain. She said health officials are taking other actions to guard against the spread of the virus, and they continue to work with the federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The virus is not spreading widely across the community at this time, Ezeke said. Chicago Department of Public Health Commissioner Dr. Allison Ardwoody said that the news was a continuation of last week's news conference in which the first case in the state was reported. She remains hospitalized and in isolation, primarily for infection control. Ardwoody said, adding the woman's husband is hospitalized and in stable condition as well. She said the CDC believes it can take between 2 and 14 days for someone who has had contact with the coronavirus to show symptoms of it if they contract it. Macon County Health Department spokeswoman Marissa Hosier said that they're monitoring the situation. We've had members of our team participating on the calls with the CDC and the IDPH. We are following the guidance from the IDPH regarding this specific situation and always have teams responding to communicable diseases and emergencies, she said. The World Health Organization declared the novel coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern after calling an emergency committee meeting Thursday. A WHO situation report dated January 30th said there are 7,818 confirmed global cases of the virus, with all but 82 cases in China. The virus has caused 170 deaths. This week, the CDC advised Americans to avoid all non-essential travel to China. Election 2020. Marois Forsyth sets $33 million referendum. Voters decide whether to replace aging middle school. Marois. A hallway lined with lockers at Marois Forsyth Middle School is only 3.5 feet wide. It's a tight fit when students are trying to get by when other kids are using their lockers in the brick 101 South Cedar Street building. Cramped hallways are just one symptom of a 90-year-old building that the district officials would like to replace. Voters will get the final say. The school board has voted unanimously to place a $33 million referendum on the March 17th ballot. This came out of the strategic plan, said middle school principal Christopher Collar. This was the first priority they wanted us to look at district-wide. From there, we started a steering committee last April and held three community engagement meetings with a very strict agenda. Here are all the different options and what's wrong with the building. Those meetings concluded with the group's recommendation to the board to place a referendum on the ballot to fund a new middle school, which will be attached to the high school. The current building is next door, but not attached. If the referendum passes, Collar said, the design would be completed by the end of this calendar year, allowing construction to begin in spring of 2021, and the school could be completed and open by the fall of 2023. There would be very little disruption to students, said Angie Woodhall, who teaches English. It would take minor adjustments, but overall, classes would go on as planned. When Marois Forsyth High School was built in 2003, the middle school moved into the former high school building. The former intermediate school, which closed when the Maroa Forsyth Grade School was built in Forsyth, would be torn down, while students would continue to use the rest of the building during the construction. The middle school serves 270 students with 18 teachers, two of whom are shared with the high school. The big advantages to a new middle school attached to the high school is it would allow us to share staff without the students having to walk between buildings, Collar said. Teachers would be in one room all day, like band and choir, and we'd be sharing a fitness center. Right now they have a high school weight room, and we have an old classroom we're using as a fitness center, and we'd be able to create one that works for both buildings. Middle school students take some classes at the high school, like geometry, and the connection would allow for encore classes for both high school and middle school students. It would also include a newer auditorium and shared space for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and multi-purpose space, Woodhall said. There are a lot of new things that we could add and improving what we already have for both high school and middle school students. Problems with the building they're in now, Collar said, include water damage from leaks, termite damage, an inadequate HVAC system without air conditioning other than window units, an electrical system that can't handle the technology needs, and today's safety concerns that can't be addressed. Modern schools have double entry that requires visitors to stop at the office, while in older buildings, visitors have to walk unaccompanied through hallways and past classrooms to get to the office. Because the process included community members' input, Collar said, the hope is that the referendum will pass. The bonds issued to pay for the high school will be retired this year, and that will reduce the amount of tax increase required to build a new middle school. Between the Trojans of Tomorrow Steering Committee and an online survey that drew 600 responses from the community's support of the plan seems clear. Superintendent John Allmeyer estimates the tax increase would amount to $54 per year for a $100,000 home, or about $1 per week. Our students deserve better, Woodhall said. They start out at the grade school, then come here for 3 years and go to a newer high school. The community supported the construction of the high school and elementary. Now it's time for all of us to step up and support a new middle school, he said. And the Maroa Forsyth referendum, what? Voters in the Maroa Forsyth School District on March 17th will decide to approve $33 million worth of bonds. Proposed funds would build and equip a new middle school building, demolish the existing middle school building, and make alterations to the high school building. What's next? If the referendum passes, the tentative timeline is designs finished by the end of 2020, construction and renovations begin in spring 2021, and occupancy in the fall of 2023. And the photographs that accompany this show Maroa Forsyth Middle School principal Christopher Collar pointing out water damage on the walls and ceiling in a classroom in MFMS in Maroa. And also the front page picture shows Mr. Collar pointing out water damage in a classroom from the ceiling. Voters in March will decide whether the aging building will be replaced. And ballot question for March 17th will read, shall the Board of Education of Maroa Forsyth Community Unit School District Number 2, Macon and DeWitt Counties, Illinois, build and equip a new middle school building on the existing Maroa Forsyth Middle School site, demolish the existing Maroa Forsyth Middle School building, alter, repair, and equip the Maroa Forsyth High School building, improve school sites, and issue bonds of said school district to the amount of $33 million for the purpose of paying the costs thereof. Big Brothers, Big Sisters program helps youth through high school. Decatur. Lillian Distelra, 15, describes herself as fairly shy, but some guidance from her big brother's big sister's mentor has helped her come out of her shell. She just now realizes how awesome she is, said Sally Waller, 62, her mentor. She's talented, an amazing artist, and very motivated. I'm a little socially awkward myself, so it helps me get to know somebody. Distelrath, a sophomore, said that they had been in the program together for about a year. The student joined the program as a freshman as a way to receive guidance from someone a bit wiser while getting through school. Some conversations between the two involve college opportunities, finding a job, and sharing personal experiences. She's come in at lunchtime and eaten with me, Distelrath said. I've enjoyed listening to stories about her daughter and where she's gone around the world. It's really interesting. January is National Mentoring Month for Big Sisters, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Illinois. The organization hosted a get-together Thursday evening at MacArthur High School as part of its Mentor 2.0 program, held once a month. It's designed to appoint an older mentor with a high school student to encourage the students while getting through school and encourage a future college education. Mentors and mentees spent the evening talking, eating, and playing games. Laughter accompanied by solo cups, dice, and other objects spilling onto the floor filled the cafeteria. The groups were playing challenges inspired by Minute to Win It, a television game show where contestants have to beat challenges in a minute. Challenges involved getting an Oreo into their mouths without using their hands, seeing who could stack the most apples without the stack falling, and keeping a balloon from touching the floor. The purpose was to ultimately challenge mentors and mentees to work together. Mentor 2.0 is a four-year high school program to focus on high school preparation for college and career readiness. A class is taught once a week at MacArthur for any students involved in the program. The curriculum includes skills like building a resume, how to be resilient, optimism about the future, and self-advocacy skills. After school, mentors and mentees chat about the lesson plan over the Mentor 2.0 online platform. The program is offered at MacArthur, only offered at MacArthur so far. Jeannie Stahlheber, Chief Executive Officer of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois, said the program lets mentors add to the lessons by incorporating their own life experiences, like how they approach building a resume, for example. As the student gets older, classes gradually start to focus more on college preparation. Even if they don't go to college, there are a lot of apprenticeships in this area, Stahlheber said. They're learning a lot of soft skills as well as in the curriculum. Tyler Ormey, a 17-year-old senior at MacArthur, will be one of the first mentees to graduate from the Mentor 2.0 program this year. Ken Von Quaylen, 54, became Ormey's mentor 4 years ago. A lot of their conversations started with the monthly meetups and online, but has since grown to texting to share how their day is going. The two have met up for a mini golf games a few times. My goal was to simply help Tyler in any way I can help him, Von Quaylen said. I really try to encourage him to think beyond high school and think as big as his dreams will take him. Stahlheber has spent some of her 27 years with Big Brothers Big Sisters as a mentor, attesting to the impact a mentor makes on a kid. She said some favorite activities with past mentees were cooking together and watching a movie, all the while learning more about each other. A big impact to this day is seeing how mentees go on to make a positive impact on others, she said. Pritzker releases 52.3 million dollars for ISU Fine Arts Complex. Normal. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Thursday that he's releasing the remaining $52.3 million for Illinois State University's long-awaited Fine Arts Complex project, which is projected to cost $61.9 million. President Larry Dietz said that the 2019-2020 academic year has been a good one for the Wonsuk Kim College of Fine Arts. In addition to the release of funds for the renovation rehabilitation project, the college received a $12 million gift last fall from Kim, for whom the college and the School of Art are now named, and her husband, Thomas Clement. Dietz said it's also good to see the state making investments in higher education on a bipartisan level. The project has been on the university's capital request list for about 20 years, and money has been earmarked for the project before, only to be held up by the state's budget troubles. The time, however, Pritzker told a packed room in the Center for the Visual Arts, you have nothing to worry about, although he joked, build fast. The university would like to build fast, but the first step will be to look at the scope of the project and what can be accomplished with the resources available, as costs for materials and labor have risen since the project was put on hold in 2015, explained Chuck Scott, who is retiring as ISU's interim associate vice president for facilities management. The project will include a combination of demolition, renovation, and new construction to enhance instructional spaces. Plans for tearing down Centennial West and the Center for Visual Arts, extensively renovating Centennial East and adding new facilities. The buildings have been described as aging facilities that do not meet today's academic needs, with ongoing problems with roof leaks, plumbing and ventilation, as well as access issues under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Freshman Braden Foreman, a music education major from Buffalo Grove, said, I was in Centennial West this morning and our professor had to bang on the radiator to get it to work properly. Foreman said he's looking forward to seeing the changes, even if many won't be completed until after he graduates. Likewise, Danielle Kong, a senior in graphic design, said, I'm excited for it to be updated. ISU has used nearly $7.5 million in internal funding for emergency repairs and maintenance to the three buildings while waiting for the project to proceed. The Center for Visual Arts was built in 1973. The Centennial buildings were built in 1959 and resemble high school buildings of that era. At the time, the buildings were used primarily to train future music teachers and art teachers. Now, in addition to teaching, many fine arts graduates enter other fields, such as becoming professional performers or artists. The money comes from the $45 billion Rebuild Illinois Capital Program approved last year. Rebuild Illinois includes $3 billion for colleges and universities across the state. It also includes $89 million for a multi-phase rehabilitation of Milner Library and $40 million for general repairs and renewal projects. And the pictures accompanying this show Governor J.B. Pritzker announcing the release of funding for renovation of the Illinois State University Visual Arts Facility, as well as money for improvements to the Milner Library and other buildings during a news conference Thursday at the Wonsuk Kim College of Fine Arts. State Senator Bill Brady left and ISU President Larry Dietz left as Pritzker made a few observations on the bipartisan process. And another picture that accompanies this article shows Illinois State University visual arts students crammed the former ISU gallery as Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the release of funding for renovation of the visual arts facility on Thursday. And there are many students standing crowded together in this room. Decatur government changed to public comment policy eyed. Public comments at Decatur City Council meetings would no longer be allowed during discussion of individual agenda items under policy changes being considered Monday. City Manager Scott Wrighton, in a memo accompanying the process, the proposed new policy said the changes were designed to make meetings more efficient, encourage opinions from all sides, prevent audience members from intimidating others, and discourage a hostile or toxic environment at meetings. The council would continue to allow a 30-minute time period at the beginning of the meetings for residents to speak, with each person limited to 3 minutes. Residents would also be able to address the council during study sessions when members engage in longer discussions on a topic and do not take binding action. Instead of commenting during the discussion of agenda items, residents would be able to submit comments to the council in writing ahead of the meeting. People who have submitted documents would be asked to speak by the city manager or a majority of council members. Also, under the proposed new policy language, council members and city staff would be given an opportunity to respond after public comments have been made. Residents would not have an opportunity for rebuttal. Current policy does not allow the council or city staff to respond to public comments. The new policy language also dictates that remarks must be made with decorum and civility and empowers the mayor to intervene if that isn't the case. While the city council wants to hear public comment from all sides of an issue, the policy says, in order to maintain civility, the mayor or acting mayor may interrupt or call out-of-order speakers who are profane, make verbal or physical threats, shout, or engage in crude and or distasteful personal attacks. Council members first discussed making changes to the public comment policy during a study session September 23rd. Options discussed at the time included eliminating the public comment after agenda items, shortening the length of the time limit for the comments at the beginning of the meeting, or after agenda items and other measures. The policy changes come at a time when the council has faced intense criticism from some speakers over its 6-1 September 30th vote against allowing recreational cannabis sales in Decatur. Some in recent months have alleged that the council was inappropriately influenced by former Macon County Sheriff Howard Buffett, who has given tens of millions of dollars to area causes, including a $60 million drug treatment and social services campus. Buffett's private foundation in December also donated funding for a police officer position devoted to catching people driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs. Council members have denied that they were unduly influenced by Buffett, who had opposed the legalization of recreational cannabis, but did not publicly address the council on the subject. Instead, several members said their votes were based on perspectives shared by law enforcement and medical professionals. The Herald and Review's parent company, Lee Enterprises, announced Wednesday that it would buy Berkshire Hathaway's new publications for $140 million. Howard Buffett's father, Warren Buffett, is the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. The policy changes up for a vote on Monday also include changes to language about public contracts, as well as the city's sale and purchase of land. Wright said the former measure incorporates legal guidance from the state, while the latter reflects a policy position that the council should approve all of the city's sales or purchases of real estate, no matter their size. And if you go, it's the Decatur City Council meeting at 5:30 p.m. on Monday, the third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 31st, 2020. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.